is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. We are on time for a Tuesday on this day on Sabres Live and full of power and energy, we presume. But we also do this show in memory of Sophia Laborde, who we have loved for so long as the bravest of brave cancer warriors, and she has passed at the age of 16.
Yes, Rasmus Dahlin's bestie. These two were like attached to the hip, and whenever she was in the building lit up, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about her later in the show, yeah. But, you know, that was very sad news we got yesterday. We talked about Jeremy Ian, a big part of this organization, but doesn't have to be a player or a staff member to be a big part of this organization. And you can follow all the players on social media.
Yeah.
They all commented on the Sabres post. They all knew Sophia personally, and they were all there for her. And this is a tough one.
Lots around the NHL. Game 4, of course, in the Cup tonight. But there's so much in the way of news and the coaching carousel. And
my goodness, Marty, I want the next half hour to all fall under the banner of Disturbed. Oh. Like, what are the Wild doing with Michael McCarron? Yeah.
Why are the Oilers considering Mike Babcock? Why is Bruce Cassidy going to get left without a chair when this musical chairs game is all said and done? Yes. Like, and okay.
Peter Laviolette to LA.
Yeah, well, Peter Laviolette, like, I almost can get, because I think the Kings are desperate enough that they need a one-year uptick, which Peter almost always provides in his career.
Well, Pete DeBoer wasn't available, so they couldn't get his one-year uptick that he always gets because he's with the Islanders. But yes, okay, so I get Artemi Panarin goes to L.A., had Peter Laviolette in New York. Maybe there's a connection there, and you say, you know what? I think we need a guy like Laviolette. And then Peter Laviolette goes to the L.A. Kings. Look, I respect a guy like Michael Pekka. Pekka had Laviolette as a coach with the Islanders, worked with him with the Washington Capitals, really speaks highly of the coach. And all of it. It's just sometimes, you know, it works for a short term, and then it goes away. And that's just the way Laviolette is as a coach. So I get the LA making that move for a veteran coach that will come in and maybe.
Did you see Pat Maroon's comments on it?
No.
On the NHL Network panel?
No, I did not
see. He may as well have had his eyes rolled in the back of his head. He was so disturbed by the recycling nature of this. It was pretty comical.
Yeah, but again, like, look, the LA Kings, I've tried a couple of different ways. They went with an assistant coach. They went with they fired a coach this year. Like, it was a weird situation in LA, and they fired their GM, Rob Blake, over a year ago. So there's been a lot of turmoil in LA, and maybe Laviolette comes in. I'm going to say I'm a little disturbed by that because I don't like the way Laviolette's teams have played, especially in this new NHL, and they chase everywhere, and you know, so the Rangers were a perfect sign of that. They didn't do anything.
Yeah, but they were really good when he came.
They were really good when he came. And not that they did better with Mike Sullivan. So that's, maybe why Laviolette looks better. So we'll take that as disturbed, whatever. Now, you mentioned Bruce Cassidy. And look, I played for Mike Babcock at the World Juniors almost 30 years ago. And Mike Babcock was Mike Babcock back then. He hasn't changed. You know what you're getting. Now, what he did with Mitch Marner in Toronto, was that acceptable? Coaches do stupid things and whatever. You hope that you learn. And then he goes to Columbus and does the same stupid things and, you know, asking for the cell phones and all of that. Look, I get that the players in Edmonton have gotten together and are like, you know what? This guy has won. This guy has had success. And we're willing to put up with some of the things that he's done. We want him as a coach. So they spoke. The only people to blame in this are the NHL. They opened up and they allowed this to happen because they wouldn't force or enforce the Vegas Golden Knights to allow the Oilers to interview Bruce Cassidy. If the league had stood up and said, you know what, Vegas, we get that you fired your guy, we get that you're paying him for the rest of his contract, but you cannot block him from getting interviewed, the Oilers would have interviewed Bruce Cassidy, they would have hired him, and then you don't have this issue. For those that think that's an issue, I personally think that's not much of an issue. The players want Mike Babcock. Here in Buffalo, after Don Granato. We had everybody saying, we need accountability. We need, they wanted Lindy Ruff. I bet you they didn't love Lindy Ruff the first year and couple of months because Lindy was tough on him. Lindy was hard. And then it turned around. Not saying Lindy Ruff is Mike Babcock or vice versa, but I'm just saying players in Edmonton ask the same thing the players in Buffalo ask, and that's what they want.
We'll see. I think it's insane, but
the problem is this guy hasn't coached in the league in forever.
Well, I don't know if that matters. I mean, I feel like guys can disappear, people can disappear for 10 years and come back and do what they do and do what they've known their entire lives. I just, to your opening point on it, I don't imagine he's changed much. No. So the fact that you're in a situation where the Players Association has to be asked about an individual's ability to come into a situation like this is a bit of a red flag. So anyway.
They just want to make sure they go through a proper channel. The NHLPA is going to get a call from Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and they're going to say, look, we've talked to the ownership. We talked to the GM. This is the guy we want. We're good with it. Okay, that's fine. Okay, call the league and tell them we've talked to you guys, and that's fine. That's what they're going to do. That's when Connor McDavid says, I want this guy, that's what they're going
to
get.
Well, another RIP to free agency of 2026, and if you needed it underscored even more. Oh, my goodness.
About the price?
Michael McCarron has never made $1 million in the course of his career, which is still under 400 games played at age 31, which tells you how challenging the path has been for McCarron. And I'm not saying there isn't a lot of tread left on the tires. Clearly, somebody believes there is. But on the heels of me freaking out when Charlie Coyle got 6 years from Columbus, I don't even know what to do with Michael McCarron getting over $3 million a year for 6 years with trade protection and possible expansion protection from the Minnesota Wild, who, by the way, were the poster franchise for cap hell for years because of the Parisian suitor fallout.
So if your TV is jumping off your TV stand or your radio is jumping out of your car, that is... Like, at first, I'm like, oh, Michael McCarron, big guy, like a serviceable guy. Like, and that's where he's been
Shana,
everywhere.
Can't teach size.
They can't teach size. Like, Montreal Canadiens, Michael McCarron, like, oh, big guy, he's going to be good. No, goes to Nashville. Big guy is going to be good. No, gets straight in Minnesota. Big guy.
He's fine. He's a decent player, but you don't need to do this.
22 points his best year. 12 goals, 10 assists, 22 points. This year, he had under 20 points, 8 goals, right? He's making $900,000. You want a depth guy? At $1.5 million, maybe, because everything's going up. And league minimum salary is going to be $1 million. So maybe it's $1.5 million. Maybe it's $2 million. You're like, you know what? Like, we want him, and he could walk to free agency. Let's give him a couple of million. AFP Analytics at Michael McCarron at 2 years at $2 million. Good job, guys, because that was the price. The Minnesota Wild see 6 years at $3.3 million with a no-trade, no-movement clause in the first 3 years of that
deal.
So
if expansion happens, Russo reports that there's language in his contract, just like in Charlie Coyle's, that if expansion happens, he doesn't have to be protected.
That just doesn't make sense.
It's just, but like, why are we going to that length with these players? It just, it all comes back to the power of the player.
Yeah.
And again, you know, an organization that's, but I don't even, I can't understand it. Like, I can understand that there's little available on July 1st, but it shouldn't affect your next 5 years beyond this July 1st. And this is nothing against Michael McCarron. I like him as a player. I'm proud of him for the journey where he was a first rounder and he just couldn't gain a foothold with Montreal. And then he moved on. And then there were moments with Nashville I really liked. And I thought he was a good fit with Minnesota.
You don't have to give him $3.3 million.
You don't have to give him
now,
6 years.
Now, my biggest thing is, like, at first, it made me think of, what does that mean for Peyton Krebs? Now, they're different players, like over 30 and 25 years old, UFA, RFA, and all of it. But, you know, Peyton Krebs is, a bottom six in the lineup, a third line, fourth line guy. That got to play on the top line and got to get points and produce. Mm-hmm. Like, the projection, again, AFP Analytics says Peyton Krebs, $3.5 million. Michael McCarron was two. Now, if you go ahead and use comparables and you say, this guy had, like, 18 points and 8 goals, and look at my season. I want 4.5. Mm-hmm. You're like, wait a second, time out. Like, we can't give Payton Krebs 4.5.
Right.
Look, Minnesota is also have to project for Quinn Hughes in a year if they want to re-sign him this summer, kicking in the next year, whatnot. You just put yourself in a tough spot. And, you know, maybe they want to get Dylan Larkin. Well, now you just gave $3.3 million to Michael McCarron. It just puts you in a tough spot.
It's not even me projecting that they're going to find cap hell again. It's not about that at all.
They
figure it out. But I just find it all unnecessary.
Would the Vegas Golden Knights have given Michael McCarron $3.3 million for 6 years? My answer is no. And I think Minnesota is trying to be like the Vegas.
Vegas has given out some tough contracts, and then they always find their way out of
them. They find their way out of it. That's the big thing. I'm not seeing that out of Minnesota yet, right? Because Billy Guerin has actually taken the buyout route and will take the hits and whatever. So I don't know. They're trying to be like Vegas.
Right? Real quick, Sebastian Cosa going to be the Oilers' number one?
This is interesting because John Gibson has a year left to his contract. They had John Gibson and Cam Talbot this year. Sebastian Cosa is that next year. It's like Walstead in Minnesota. That was kind of like the Cosa for Detroit, the guy that's there for the future. And the Oilers are apparently eyeing Sebastian Cosa as their guy of the future. So we'll see if Detroit is willing to part ways with Cosa. The problem is after Gibson, you got nothing else. So I would think that if the Oilers make the deal, maybe Tristan Jarry or Connor Ingram or somebody, the rights to or whatnot would come the other way. Calvin Pickard or whatever, but yeah.
Well, they have other goalies in the system now that are pushing Cosa. That's why the Red Wings are in this situation where they would be, you know, in a dilemma and having to see him go on waivers. Postava had a really good year in the AHL, and Trey Augustine, obviously, very highly regarded. So, yeah, it's interesting, but it would be also
Ingram
Edmonton.
Doesn't have a contract for this year. And
I'm not worried about the – I was thinking more from Detroit's standpoint.
And Calvin Pickard's also out. So the Oilers could acquire Cosa without having to give a goalie back.
Right. You know what contract seems good, even though we don't know the full terms, because you're lacking on your insider skills. But Haley Skamura, friend of the show, has a 3-year deal with the PWHL Vegas.
Yeah, this is great for Haley Skamura, who won the Walter Cup as the PWHL champion with Montreal Victoire this year. So she gets a 3-year deal. We know there's expansion. Now, the PWHL just recently said we're going to disclose all the salaries, and they did that, and it was awesome for the players to be able to now know what everybody's making. You know, we see what the NHL that did in the 90s, being able to compare and have the marketplace set. So Haley goes to Vegas on a 3-year deal, but they're still stubbing their toes on different things. So the Vegas PWHL team announced today that they have signed Hillary Knight to a contract. It's already been reported that she will be traded to Detroit and in a sign and trade, but they cannot announce the trade until next week because picks cannot be traded until next week, and there's picks involved. So Vegas PWHL make this big thing. Welcome. She's a knight, and the whole thing, everybody knows she's going to Detroit. So I'm a little like, okay, like you don't have to do this, but congrats for Haley Skamura going to Vegas. She's going to continue her career, 3-year deal. That's awesome.
All right, game 4, the Stanley Cup final is tonight. Who are you now expecting in goal for the Hurricanes?
I think the more I think about it, the more I think it's Brendan Bussey. And I know yesterday there was a little confusion as to, well, Freddie Anderson wasn't on the ice at practice for the Carolina Hurricanes. He was having a maintenance day. So there was some that reported Bussey is in the starter's crease. Well, obviously, because one of them has to be in the starter crease because it was Bussey at one end and Kochetkov at the other end. What if Kochetkov had been in the starter crease? People would have freaked out. Kochetkov is in the starter crease. Like, come on. We don't have to play that game. Freddie Anderson was having a maintenance day. But the more I think about it, Duffer, number one, Freddie Anderson's trending down. His numbers went from 955 to 945 to 886 to 815.
Yeah. So are Carter Hart's.
Yes, it's normal, right?
Well, like, no, I mean, it's become a bit of a high-scoring series. So.
It wasn't supposed to be, but it is. And both teams are giving up over 4 goals per game right now. But here's the thing.
Yeah, but why would you say it's not supposed to be when both teams have shown a great ability to score? Why do people default to the defensive side when these are top-scoring teams?
because I always feel like the defensive side trumps the offense. Mm-hmm. And Carolina was giving up a 1.6 goal per game, and Vegas was 2.3.
Yeah, but they were not up against high offensive teams.
Yeah, I you're absolutely right. But I just felt like my prediction was this was going to be a low-scoring series. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been. But Freddie Anderson...
I wasn't picking at you. It was like a collective we. I felt like it was what you were echoing.
But at the same time, too, like who's going to hold on to leads? Because it was a 2-0 lead in game one for Carolina, 2-0 lead in game two for Vegas. Yep. Vegas wins game one, Carolina wins game two. It was a 4-0 lead for Vegas. And so I'm saying, like, there's got to be a better focus on the defensive side, especially if you take a lead. Don't open the door for the other team. But having said that, the biggest reason why I think Brendan Bussey is going to start game four for Carolina is the hit to the head that Freddie Anderson took on that second overturned goal. Yeah. Barbashev came in, hit him pretty hard in the head, and he was down but fought it like, I don't want to be taken out by the concussion spotter. And then he gave up four goals right after that. And we all know Freddie has had issues, injuries, and head issues and whatnot. I think that gives me more of the sense that Bussey will go in.
Yeah.
And Freddie may not even be dressed tonight. Like, you may just say, stay away. And then if you're ready for game five, maybe we'll consider it depending on where we are. But I think you may see him completely away.
2-1 or none. How many cups will the Carolina organization have within the next 2 weeks? Because they are also playing for the Calder Cup against Toronto.
Oh, I am going to say none. I feel like Toronto, the Marlies, are the team that's going to, you know, they had a little bit of rest here. They were waiting to see the West, final and everything. So I feel like that Carolina is not going to win the Stanley Cup. I picked Vegas, and I don't think they'll get the Calder Cup. I think the Marlies are going to win it.
Okay. And
you know more about the AHL than me, though. What do you think of the Marlies and their push in the Calder Cup playoffs this year?
Well, Alex Nylander had the winner in the last series against Wilkes-Barre, and obviously Easton Cowan has had a monumental spring with them, which is what you dream of organizationally when you send a player down, right? And
after this season,
look, the Amerks were unfortunately the first victims of this, and that was the Maple Leafs being out and positioning a lot of players to go to the AHL and boost their chances. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure everybody immediately expected Toronto to go all the way. The division itself, the North, was tough again.
Very tough.
But here they are, and Wilkes-Barre had an amazing season, and, you know, Toronto was able to get past them, and the Chicago-Colorado series just ended in 7 games. And
Chicago's always been good, but Carolina's moved around with their farm team, so that has been a bit of a challenge to figure out where they were going.
D&D time.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
You're taller than I thought you were.
Not when you see this clip of Lisa Salters and Victor Wembanyama after the game. She's 5'2", he's 7'4". And she had to reach way up with the microphone. I wish this is one of those situations like Rob Ray, Logan Stanley. Put, like, Lisa on a box so she can be a little higher for the interview.
Be confident in who you are. Don't resort to
It looks weird on TV when it's, that big. And then we got this great clip on social media of what Lisa looked like, a little bit like the Statue of Liberty, like reaching out with the right hand way, way up. I just feel like I'd like to see, like, just a little bit more. I know there's a big, big height difference, but just allow for both to be in the same screen when you're, like, recording after the game. What a game, by the way.
You want to stack your golf balls again and see if you can get your dimples in a row?
This is why this is disturbed today. Is yesterday, we decided to do what the Nashville Predators had asked the prospect, is to stack golf balls.
Yeah, but we didn't say how many, and you've been called out for not doing three because it was suggested that two is child's play.
Suggested, sorry. I did it again earlier. Now I won't be able to do two. But somebody said, two is too easy. You got to do three. Well, I got to start with two, and I don't think I'm going to get it done today. So.
Why did the carpentry get altered here?
I think I've got different golf balls. Again, I said the trick is to look at the dimples and to make sure that you get the big ones so that they can find a good spot.
Well, as Marty continues his quest.
Jeff Merrick responded, by the way. He said, welcome to the Nashville Predators, Martin Biron. So good.
All right.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good luck to you. I promise not to rain on your parade. Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet, in advance of the draft, is coming up on Sabres Live.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Lock in your seats for the 26-27 Sabres season with a 10-game plan. You can enjoy per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, and a guaranteed seat location. Choose from two plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. Hopefully one of them includes Michael McCarron. Learn more and secure your plan today at sabres.com/10. Good news if you miss McCarron this year. There's a good chance you'll get to see him.
Six more years.
Sam Cosentino is with us from Sportsnet. He's their lead draft analyst, and it is great to have him on the show. Hi, Sammy. How are you?
Hey, guys. Nice to be on. You got a little Michael McCarron talk going on.
I'm a little bent out of shape on 6 years for Michael. I love Michael. I don't know. I just don't understand it. That's all.
What was the dollar?
$3.3 a year.
Which is three times what he was making.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm looking at two guys there that's probably worth $6 million a year apiece. So you guys shouldn't be jealous.
Yeah, but $6 million over the next 60 years is not the same thing. So that's the problem. Hey, do you remember Michael McCarron and others like back in the drafts that stood out to you? And now, like, you look back like 10, 12 years later and you're like, ooh, I got that one right or I got that one wrong. Which one, could you say like is at the top of your list?
Okay, so the McCarron is actually really interesting, really good place to start. First rounder, watched him in the Memorial Cup and thought, wow, this guy's a little bit of a unicorn in that he's a power forward and he can produce. So he comes into the league, he doesn't produce, and he's not really a power forward. So I got to give Michael a ton of credit because what he's done is he's like reinvented himself.
Yeah.
And if you look at the type of guys that are getting paid now, I think about Matthew Olivier comes to top of mind to me. Now, Michael McCarron isn't that, right? That's probably the most feared guy in the league. But the element to be able to produce a little bit and to play really tough physical minutes, and anytime these deals are made and they're juxtaposed against the playoffs, they automatically add additional value because you're watching the size of Vegas and what they're doing. And you're watching the size of these Stanley Cup winning teams go back to when St. Louis won and Tampa and their defense and so on and so forth. And so for Michael McCarron, who can play a third line role, a fourth line role, he can eat minutes, he can play hard, heavy minutes. And every now and then, if you have to sneak him up on the power play on the net front, you can do that without issue. He could kill for you a little bit. So he does a lot of different things. And I think when you look at the dollar value at 3-3 spread out over a six-year term, those guys they're becoming more and more valuable every day. The other part of that is when you look at where the free agency class is, I mean, you know, there's not a ton of guys like him who are left, who are just starting to kind of find their way and be what they're supposed to be. So anyways, I look at that. But you're asking me about a guy who I got really wrong. You remember Braden Holtby? I suppose you remember him. He won a cup, yeah. Right?
Wow.
It's pretty good.
I thought he was brutal. In junior, brutal. That's how smart I am, boys.
Well, it all happens.
Beat Vegas.
He beat Vegas, you're right. Yeah. That was the OV Cup. But he didn't start the finals. It was Philip Grubauer, and then Olby came in the first round, and the rest was history. Okay, Sabres are picking 27th. This is a bit of a foreign type of area. We were always like, hey, what do we got in the top 10, top 12, top 6, whatever. First pick, 27th. So we're asking draft experts, what's there at 27? Or some players that maybe you think are good? You gave us a few names, but I want to just let you go wherever you want to go. Sabres get on stage, 27th overall pick. Is there a name that stands out to you?
Okay, so the one name that really stands out to me is Marcus Nordberg, okay? So this guy is an absolutely fascinating guy. In terms of pure talent, he's a top 10 guy, okay? A top 10 guy in this draft class, which is very difficult, as you know, okay? But then you look at some of the antics, the inconsistency in his play. Is he consistently competing? Is he worried about back-checking and doing all the other things that are going to allow you to play regular minutes? I'm not so sure that's the case for Nordberg. But then you look at the skill and you're like, wow, this guy is legit. So the fact being, you know, his dad played in the NHL. He comes into our room at the combine, and it just doesn't give you the warm and fuzzies. Like, this is the guy that I want to go to war with when it comes to the National Hockey League regular season and then into the playoffs. Having said that, you're an organization that values skill. You have a ton of good forwards. That next wave of forwards, you need to start coming. And so I look at this guy and I say, all right, if I have true belief in my player development system and my coaching, this is a guy that I think can get him to play just enough defense, just enough with compete, that his skill is going to win out in the long run. And so what you do at 27 with where you are, you take a shot at the title, you go at it with all kinds of risk, knowing that the Buffalo Sabres had to have a ton of really good and talented forwards for the foreseeable future. But maybe this guy starts the next wave if you can sort of figure him out. So he, to me, is a very interesting character, again, because I do believe he's a top 10 pure talent guy in this draft class. But I do believe, with all the other things, he's going to be available that late.
Now, because he's a Swede, when you mention, you know, the skill set, but the question mark about everything else, is he like an Alex Nylander? The Sabres drafted Alex Nylander, and they were hoping the skill was going to shine through. Is that the same thing, but hoping that you flip it on the positive side?
That, I'd say that's a really good comparison, actually, Marty, thinking about Alex. And I watched Alex and all of his skill through his Mississauga and Brampton days in the OHL. And I thought, boy, this guy, like he's unbelievable. And now, you know, he's using that skill in the AHL and playing with the Marlies and going to Calder Cup. We know that story. But, like, I think there's a lot of similarities there, you know, because when I looked at Alex, like, was he all that concerned about the backtrack? Was he all that concerned about his off-puck play? Was he really concerned about playing defense? I would say those questions are very much the same. So as an organization, do you want to go down that road again? Well, I think when Alex was taken and where we are now with the Buffalo Sabres are two different time frames, right? Mm-hmm. So you probably couldn't afford that risk at that time, especially that high. I think he was taken eighth, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But maybe at 27, I can afford to take that risk, mm-hmm. especially knowing that I have such a really good group now. And I got a couple more guys that are, you know, you saw Lanius at the end of the year, like guys that are starting to come too. So I think being in a different time and a different place really speaks to the risk tolerance that you can have. And then again, picking 8 and 27 are two totally different things as well.
They are, but the Sabres, beyond the highest picks that they've had in a lot of recent memory, they did grab Jiří Kulík at 28 in the first round a few years back. And then when you marry his, you know, hopefulness of full health this year and a return to the lineup with Austlin and Helenius and Benson, like, you just said, Sam, it's a different time. Do you think this organization should feel really, really good about what they have been able to pull out of the draft, even just in the last 5 years? Like, beyond having Owen Power where they got Owen Power, it's like since then, I think there's more of a revelation for people here of late, like, oh, that was a good pick. That was a good pick when these are not the absolute locked in ones, you know, once you kind of get into that 10 to 14 range, right?
Yeah, and it's funny because when you win, they all become good picks, right?
Yeah.
And until you win, you're like, oh man, I can't believe they took this guy, right? So winning does have that huge impact on the group for sure. But you're right though, like being able to pick guys later in the draft, it's huge. It's where the scouts make their money. It's where GMs keep their jobs. And that's a hugely important piece to all of this. And like, guys, think about when Zach Benson was taken. Oh my gosh, he's too small. He's this and that. Mm-hmm. Like, I would take Zach Benson on my team as a top 10 pick all day, every day. And I felt very strongly about him in his draft class because here's a guy who, I mean, he loves it, right? You could probably talk to him about any statistical category in the NHL and he would have an answer for you or would be able to get in the conversation. And then you look like he wasn't this ratty when he played in the Western Hockey League with the Winnipeg Ice. But now that part of his game has started to come out. My goodness, with where he was picked at 9, like I love this guy. I have always loved this guy, but I love him even more now. And he is just, you know, he's just one of those kind of grease bag type of players. And I mean that in the most respectful way. So again, you're taking a little bit of risk because of the size and whatever else, but I don't think anyone's worried about that now.
Yeah, Brendan Bean wants him to play for the Bills now. He's like, you'd been a good player. So he's like, I love you. So anyway, okay, you mentioned, you know, you gave us some names, and there's a couple of guys I really didn't know much about, and now I'm like, I love them. And they're not the Sedins. They're not the Sedin twins, but it's Marcus and Liam Ruck. They played at Medicine Hat. One is a goal scorer, 45 goals. The other one had 87 assists. Like, over 100 points, both of them. Do you think, like, there could be teams, and maybe the Sabres late in the first round, to say, hey, let's get one late first round, another one early second round, maybe make a move? Like, is there teams that are trying to get both of them in this draft?
So here's what I'd say, Marty. They are the most interesting study. I love them when they came into our interview room, but I do have concerns if they're not drafted together. And I mean real concerns about that. These are two guys, 18 years old. They have spent 4 days away from each other. Four. Okay, so think about that for a sec. Well, 4 days and 8 minutes, right? Because one's 8 minutes older than the other one. So they have been apart for that amount of time. When you look at them, they have that Sedin kind of chemistry, right? Each one knows where the other's going to be. Each one can finish each other's sentence. The only difference between the two, if you stood them in a room and you gave them ketchup, one of them doesn't like ketchup and the other one does. And really, that's the only discernible part. Okay, one's a scorer. You know, the other fascinating part is they're mirrored. So you know what that means? Like, one guy's a lefty, one guy's a righty, one guy's a playmaker, one guy's a goal scorer, one guy writes with his left, the other with the right, one guy plays golf left, the other guy plays right. They're exact mirror images of one another. So that part is just absolutely crazy. And that speaks to the telepathy that I think they have between one another. But getting back on a more serious note, like, because of all of that stuff, I would be concerned if I didn't draft them together, because that's all they've ever known for 18 years. Now, some people are going to say, well, you need to be apart from your brother and this is going to be the best thing for you. With these guys, I don't believe that to be true.
Yeah.
I don't believe that to be true. So likely the scenario would be you'd probably have to pick from somewhere in that 25 range, and you'd have to pick again in that 30 to 35 range. Okay. Now, if you wanted to guarantee them both, you could probably do it if you're Washington at 16 and 18. You would be able to do it if you're St. Louis, most likely. I think 11, 15, and maybe 18 or 9 or 19 or 20, whatever it is they have. You might be able to do it there. Calgary would be more of a target for me. They're going to get Vegas's first rounder, so 31 or 32, and then they're going to pick really early in round number two. So that's more of a target I would look at. But I would honestly be really concerned if I didn't draft them both. I think the sum of the parts, together they're better. I guess that's the way I'd put it. And apart, I'd be concerned.
Sabres, by the way, don't have a second or third round pick this year. So they would have to manipulate the situation.
But, you know, we all think there's going to be some movement with the Sabres leading to the draft with their cap and the players and having to resign Benson and maybe trade. So maybe something comes back and you can make that happen.
Sammy, who else on your list here that the Sabres could be zeroing in on late in the first?
Yeah, a couple defensemen. And I think the success we've seen with Samuelson really speaks to the next two guys. It's William Håkansson, who's a Swedish player, a guy who just... I have such a great appreciation at this age, Marty, and you have a kid who's not too far off of this. Like, to understand what you are at this age and live true to that and execute in that regard is truly fascinating to me, because everyone is so fixated on points that you have to put up points. Hawkinson's not that guy. He's not going to be the huge point producer, but what he is going to be is a steady Eddie all day, every situation, play with enough physicality that he's not going to hurt you. He's going to move pucks efficiently. And I think he has got an offensive game that is just slowly going to rise. Is it ever going to be a 50-point guy? Probably not, but I think he's a wonderful complimentary guy. Now, the guy along those same lines is Juho Pipparinen, who's a Finnish player who played in Tappara this year. Point production, again, not really a big concern, but he understands what he is. And these complimentary guys are making a lot of money these days, because without the complimentary guy, you know, Bowen Byram can't be Byram. Hughes can't be Hughes. Makar can't be Makar. Devin Taves, look at the career he's carved out being a complimentary guy. Now, still a really good player in his own right, don't get me wrong, but he's not Makar. He allows Makar, I think, to be Makar. So those complimentary guys, Hockenson, Pippurinen, are both guys that I would look at in that similar type of Samuelson role, where maybe you, the world underappreciates them until you realize you have the guy signed for 100 years at whatever, $4-4.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Now, usually, you know, you have to adjust to the NHL or to the pro game. So you're a good goal scorer. You score a lot of goals. Maybe you are a fourth line guy, whatever. Rob Ray even said, yeah, I scored goals in juniors and then I had to fight, whatnot. Those two defensemen you talked about combined at 5 assists, 0 goals this year. And we saw Matias Samuelson figure out, like, I got skills. I can shoot the puck. I can score. Do they have the skill set, though? That's the thing teams will look at. Can they shoot the puck? Can it be there with some offense at some point, or is it strictly like Jay McKee, where could not shoot the puck, you know, anywhere from outside of 20 feet, but could play defensively hockey and block shots?
I think there's more to it than that with both of these guys. Okay. I think there's a little bit of an offensive thing that, you know, are you projecting a 25 or 30 point guy? You know, the guy I think about in those regards, different body type, albeit, is Neil Pionk. In Winnipeg, right? Like an off year this year, but you go back and track his last 3 or 4 years, he's between a 30 and 43 point guy, I think, for the Winnipeg Jets. And he actually, for a smaller guy, defends really well. Well, these guys don't have to worry about the size thing. They don't, I think they're going to be fine defensively. And now, can you get to that Neil Pionk level? Is it a 30 or a 43 point guy? And if I can find that guy and also be a complementary to one of my higher octane offensive defensemen, now I think you're finding value at that part in the draft.
Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet with us here as we talk draft. It's upcoming 26th and 27th here in Buffalo. Are you staying true to your list? And do you like, is Stenberg the number one prospect for you? And does that mean you think he will go number one?
Okay, so this is a great question. So we come out of the combine, you acquire additional data, okay? And then you go back and then you throw it in the pot and then you come out and you're watching more video and you're making phone calls and you're talking to people. And so there's two elements. You have your rankings, which is me, if I were a scout, how do I view that player? How do I rank them, okay? And then you have your mock draft, which is, well, Mike Greer's done this the last couple of years. I think Mike Greer's going to do this. And you know, Yarmo has a history of doing this in Columbus, maybe going off the board a little bit, right? Igor Chinnikov, 2020 draft. Maybe he's a guy that fits in Yarmo's mold. And so now you start to think along with the teams. In terms of the best player that I see right now, I think Stenberg is the most well-rounded player that this draft class has to offer. Now, he's not at a premium position. He's on the wing. He's never played center, even going back to his minor days. And quite frankly, I don't know how interested he is in converting to that position at the National Hockey League level. He knows he's a really good player where he is. I think he can carry his skill set forward and be that well-rounded guy with a bit of swagger and some winning pedigree. Okay. Now, Gavin McKenna is an entirely different story. While I might have him currently as a guy not as well-rounded, what I can't get by is the fact that this is a potential 100-point guy in the National Hockey League. And so do I sit there and do I say, do I take the guy who I know is going to play in every situation, has swagger, has winning pedigree, and I know is going to be well-rounded and not going to have to be on about playing defense? Or am I going to take the guy whose offense I know for sure is going to play, especially on a first power play unit, and then try and work those other things into his game like we saw in the second half at Penn State? But also in the back of my mind, oh boy, man, I don't know if I can pass up on a potential 85, 90, 100-point guy. So that's going to be the debate that goes on. And it's funny because I've said this all along, okay? And I'll repeat it here for you guys. I don't think there's a National Hockey League general manager who has the stones to bypass Gavin McKenna as the first overall pick.
Yeah, I think that would be very hard, especially if you won the lottery like Toronto and you've had the Gavin McKenna story for multiple years. I think that would be hard. I appreciate what you did in your list. Because at 32, the last pick of the first round, you decided to put a goalie there. Just to say, I got a goalie into my list. Thank you, Sam. That was awesome. But what do you think of the goaltending crop and what we're seeing, you know, with the goalies moving into this draft?
So really interesting. Like, you know, some of the goaltending in the non-traditional markets, you know, the Finns, the Czechs especially, yeah. We're starting to see a little bit of a rise there. If you look at where the National Hockey League goalies right now, think about picking three goalies for Team USA in the Olympic gold medal, and you end up with Hellebuck the whole time, but the other guys are actually really good, and there's a couple more beyond that. You think about the Russians, where they are, and now we're not as exposed to the Russians as we are, but, like, if they put a team together, you Sorokin, Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, like, who would you pick of that lot? Where the goaltending is suffering is in Canada, quite frankly. And I wish I had an answer as to why that's the case. But if I'm looking at this draft class in particular, Brady Nolan played at the under 18. His numbers aren't going to knock you off the table because their team wasn't particularly strong. But the guy that I like is Tobias Trabel. And that's the guy that you're seeing on your list, Marty. And I didn't do that just for you. I love you, buddy. But I have big belief in this guy. So he's a really kind of cool story because Youngstown holds a camp in Czechia, and they go over there and they're like, this guy's like 6'3", he's a right catch guy, like, you know, like there's a lot of really good stuff. So then he comes over to Youngstown and he's having a great year, putting up good numbers on a really good team. And then this Chipotle All-American game comes along January 15th and he's a late add to injury, and he walks in there and he makes 19 saves and 19 shots and was by far the best goalie in that game. Now, it's not just a one-game deal, I understand. Yeah. But if you look at the numbers and extrapolate them throughout the year, really good. The size thing, it'll hit for every team, right? 6'3 and above. The right catch thing, I always find that interesting. Marty, don't you? Yeah. Okay. So,
Duffer does.
And, then, and now I look at a guy who, when I watch him play, he's consistently square to the puck. He's extremely calm. He takes pucks in softly, and those that he can't, he is in position enough to direct them to areas out of trouble. So all of these things combined, plus the size, really cool. And I have to say this, guys, like, he showed up in our interview room, and we got a kick out of it. Like, he's a good-looking young dude. He's got the Louis Vuitton bracelet. He's got the Rolex going. You know, I think his dad's an entrepreneur, so he's got some dough. You know, he's Czechia from Youngstown. Like, this guy, he walks in like he's the man. And I kind of like that. I think that's a pretty good trait for a goalie to have. But yep. You talk to his teammates and his coach, and they're like, oh, yeah, this guy, he's never rattled by anything. Well, why would you be? You probably got a couple schmill already sitting in the bank, right?
I love it. Sammy, great stories and really great insight, as always. We'll see you in just a couple of weeks.
Okay, looking forward to it, guys. Thanks.
Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet, terrific draft analyst for years, and it clearly has continued. We thank him for his time. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Dallas Stars have been clearing a lot of hurdles of late in their quest to move out to Plano, Texas. So we've got a $3 billion rendering to show you of what will be a future site of the next, not necessarily the next, but a future Sabres 10-game winning streak being punctuated in that new arena district. Good luck to the Stars in their transition, which is expected by 2031. On this date, the draft was held in 1982. Sabres had three first-rounders, Phil Housley, Paul Sear, Dave Andrechuk, obviously two Hall of Famers, and yes. Paul was a real tough and good goal scorer, passed way too young. Mm-hmm. And on this date, happy birthday to former Amerk of 5 years and briefly a Sabre, Don McSween, and future Sabre, we expect Radim Mertka, who is 19 today.
Well, happy birthday to Radim Mertka. And yes, we talked about defensemen and prospects, and he's a big one for the Sabres moving forward, that's for sure.
Well, last words from you on this day to someone who meant so much to us.
Yes, and obviously learning the passing of Sophia Laborde yesterday. I mean, she had been battling cancer for 4 years, was only 16, was a bright light whenever she walked in the building. You felt her presence because everybody had a big smile because she brought a big smile onto everybody. Rasmus Dahlin's bestie. And we think of her family and everybody that she touched along the way because she was one of those people of strength that gave strength to everybody around that she got to know.
A star of many a Hockey Fights Cancer Nights, but as you said, just her presence on an everyday basis should all make us realize what we have every day.
Yeah, and what tomorrow's not guaranteed, so you just enjoy today. and you you love the loved ones that you have around you.
Draft talk continues, and Stanley Cup final talk continues as well. Dave Pagnotta from Fourth Period joins us tomorrow on Sabres Live.